This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Mathalu alladhina yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabilillahi kamathali habbatin anbatat sab'a sanabil kamathali habbatin anbatat سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran strongly condemns Israel's attack on its diplomatic premises in Syria, saying the regime seeks to escalate conflict in the region while evading accountability. President Raisi says a terrorist attack on Iran's embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and last struggle of a falling regime. The World Bank says Israel's onslaught on Gaza has inflicted about $18.5 billion in damage to the critical infrastructure there. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour: the United Nations Security Council has held an emergency meeting on the latest Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Addressing the event, Iran's deputy representative to the UN called on the world body to vehemently denounce Israel's violation of the international regulations.
Regrettably, the absence of accountability and the Council's inaction has only encouraged and even emboldened this regime to continue its violation unchecked. It is high time for the Security Council to shoulder its responsibility and address the real threat to international peace and security. The Security Council must promptly fulfill its duty in response to Israel's reckless defiance. Urgent and enforceable measures must be taken to compel this regime to uphold its obligations.
Zahra Ershadi said Israel is defying Security Council resolutions and shows disregard for its international obligations. Syria's ambassador to the UN also called the attack a grave violation of international laws and norms. He said the Arab country holds Israel and the U.S. fully accountable. The Syrian official added the Israeli regime would not have dared to attack other nations' diplomatic premises if it wasn't for Washington's blind support. The Russian ambassador, whose country has called the meeting, slammed the airstrike as a flagrant violation of Syria's sovereignty. He said Israel seeks to further fuel the regional conflicts. China's envoy also condemned Israel's attack as a grave violation of the UN Charter and international law, and a breach of the sovereignty of both Syria and Iran. Or no verified data. Earlier, we were joined by political analyst Mohammad Marandi from Tehran to discuss the Israeli strike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Syria. He says Israel continues its atrocities in the region because of the U.S. political and military support.
The Israeli regime is allowed to carry out any atrocity because of Western support. We've seen for decades how they've imposed apartheid, how they've carried out ethnic cleansing, how they regularly carry out massacres in Gaza, in the West Bank, and now we have a genocide. So when the West allows the Israeli regime to conduct itself this way, there's really no surprise when it carries out an attack on sovereign countries. The Iranian embassy is a part of Iran's sovereignty, and the murder of Iranian officials in that building is an attack on the Iranian people and the Iranian state. What I find extraordinary, though, is that even now, Western regimes do not condemn the regime, even in a way in which makes it look as if they're serious. The U.S. is definitely complicit. It's more than complicit. The United States is the senior partner in the Holocaust in Gaza. Everything that the Israeli regime does can only be done with direct U.S. support.
A funeral has been held in the Syrian capital, Damascus, for the victims of the recent Israeli airstrike on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Ibrahim Lahti has more.
Scores of mourners have attended a funeral for the commanders of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, who were assassinated in an Israeli airstrike on Iran's embassy in Damascus.
The crime committed by the Israeli regime is definitely a serious one. It's a violation of international laws and norms. The UN Security Council has met over the attack. The world body must respond to this crime appropriately. According to the international law, Iran has the right to give a proportionate response to the Israeli attack.
The funeral was attended by religious and political figures as well as Syrian people. Mourners there stressed that the martyrs will pave the way for the final victory in Gaza.
We, as followers of the path of martyrs, must not allow despair or frustration to affect us in the axis of resistance. God willing, we will follow the path of the martyrs with firmness and patience until God grants us victory.
People carried the martyrs' coffins on their shoulders, promising to keep their legacy alive and to continue their path until the final victory in Gaza.
With pride, sadness and grief, mourners bid farewell to their hero martyrs and affirmed that the crimes of this barbaric regime will only strengthen their faith in the axis of resistance and its ability to defeat Zionism and its sponsors. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Well, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed Tehran will make the occupying Zionist regime regret its deadly airstrike on the Iranian embassy in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks in a message of condolence on the martyrdom of a group of Iranian military advisors in Monday's Israeli aerial raid on Syria. The leader described Israel as a hated occupying regime. He vowed that the evil regime will be punished. Ayatollah Khamenei also saluted the martyrs of the attack, including two senior IRGC commanders, Major General Mohammad Reza Zahiri and General Mohammad Hadi Hajrahimi. Now let's take a look at the profile. Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahiri was killed in the Israeli attack in Damascus.
Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a senior commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps' Quds Force, was killed in an unprecedented Israeli attack targeting the five-story consular building of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Born in 1960 in the central Iranian city of Isfahan, Zahedi joined the IRGC in 1980 and fought in various battles during the Iran-Iraq War. Zahedi quickly rose through the ranks and from 1983 to 1986 took command of an important brigade of IRGC ground forces that was used to break enemy lines in multiple major operations. Later, he was promoted to commander of the IRGC's 14th Imam Hussein Division, a position he held until 1991, several years after the war had ended. In the 2000s, Zahedi served in more senior positions, including commanding the IRGC's Air Force and also Ground Force. During his tenure as the IRGC's Ground Force commander, he also spent a year at the helm of the Thara Law headquarters, which is responsible for protecting security in the capital, Tehran. Zahedi joined the Quds Force in 2008. There, he led operations in Syria and Lebanon and played a key role in Iran's advisory support for Syria's war on terror. From 2016 to 2019, the Brigadier General returned to Tehran to serve as the IRGC's deputy for operations. He rejoined the IRGC's Quds Force in 2019 and served the force until his martyrdom.
Iran's president says a terrorist and criminal attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria is a sign of Israel's profound desperation and helplessness. Ibrahim Raisi was speaking with his Syrian counterpart Bashar al-Assad on the phone. Raisi added that the passivity and weak position of some Arab countries has prevented the Islamic world from adopting a united stance against Israel and made the regime more brazen in committing crimes. He described Israel's insane actions as the last struggles of this falling regime. He also slammed the U.S. and its Western allies for providing financial, weaponry, and media support to Israel. Assad, for his part, condemned Israel's attack as a violation of international law and a sign of moral degeneration of the regime. He also expressed his condolences to the government and nation of Iran and the families of those killed in the Israeli attack. Iranians in several cities across the country, including the capital Tehran, have held anti-Israeli, anti-U.S. protests after several Iranian generals and officers were killed in an Israeli attack in Syria. The protesters demand a decisive response and revenge for the deadly strike on Iran's embassy in Damascus, Fatima Masumi reports.
Iranians took to the streets of the capital Tehran and gathered at iconic Palestine Square at midnight after the deadly Israeli attack on Iran's embassy in Syria. They chanted death to the Israeli regime and death to America as they waved Palestine flags. The protesters expressed their support for Palestinian people in Gaza as Israel's genocidal war continues unabated.
When we heard what has happened, we couldn't tolerate it, and we came here for the sake of our martyrs. Our Muslim brothers and sisters, Palestinians, Syrians, are all a part of our own nation, and there's no difference between us.
Two of our generals were martyred, so we have gathered here to show our readiness for retaliation. We are asking the Islamic Republic of Iran to take serious action against these atrocities and the disrespect towards our nation and also the innocent Palestinians.
On Monday, Iran's ambassador to Damascus, Hossein Akbari, confirmed that Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his deputy Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were killed in the Israeli attack.
It is our duty to come out because we felt that even though the resistance movement is showing patience towards the Israeli regime, we are still witnessing that the regime is pressing ahead with its atrocities, with the recent incident of the attack on the Iranian consulate.
We have gathered here at this hour to show that the innocent martyrs in Syria were killed amid injustice and impunity by the bloody hands of the Zionist regime. The regime has been killing innocent people, especially children, for many years.
The attack came as almost 6 months into the Gaza hostilities, the regime has failed to achieve its objectives of destroying Hamas, despite killing tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children. The two slain Iranian generals had been comrades of top Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani, who was also assassinated in an attack in January 3, 2020. General Soleimani played a key role in fighting and decimating the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group in the region, particularly in Iraq and Syria.
A large number of people have gathered here in Palestine Square to strongly condemn the recent Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in the capital of Syria, Damascus. Fatem Masumi, Tehran.
A joint report by World Bank and the United Nations shows the Israeli war on Gaza has caused damages of around $18.5 billion to Gaza's critical infrastructure. The report says the structural damage caused by the Israeli carpet bombing of Gaza has affected every sector of the Palestinian territory's economy. The damages are equivalent to 97% of the combined GDP of the West Bank and Gaza in 2022. The report covers only the first 4 months of the Israeli genocide in Gaza and embodies some aspects of the besieged strip's humanitarian crisis as well. It is found out that more than half of the territory's population is on the brink of famine. The report also said over 70% of the Palestinians in Gaza has been displaced due to the ongoing Israeli airstrikes and bombing. Israel deliberately terrorizing aid workers and disrupting humanitarian activities in Gaza. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says nearly 180 of its staff have been killed in Israeli onslaught on the war-ridden territory, several in the line of duty. The UN body added the war on Gaza has witnessed the highest number of aid worker deaths ever recorded in any conflict, emphasizing that humanitarian personnel must be protected at all times. The statement comes as an Israeli airstrike in the central city of Deir al-Bala has claimed the lives of seven international aid workers associated with a U.S.-based charity. Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu has admitted the attack was carried out by regime forces, but claimed that the raid was unintentional. The head of the World Central Kitchen, however, has called the incident a targeted attack, saying the strike indeed targeted humanitarian organizations showing up in the direst of situations where food is being used as a weapon of war. Meantime, international condemnations have been pouring in following the attack, with the U.S., which is the regime's staunchest ally, expressing deep concern over the strike. Australia has also slammed the attack as completely unacceptable. The U.K., meanwhile, has urged Israel to provide an explanation. International Quds Day is an annual pro-Palestinian event marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The day was designated by founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, in 1979 in solidarity with Palestinians. Muslims worldwide will mark this year's Quds Day on the coming Friday. Our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, has asked some Lebanese about the event and its importance in the Muslim world. Let's take a listen.
On Al-Quds Day, we salute the man who established it, Imam Khomeini. God bless his soul. We also salute the courageous Iranian people, and we give our condolences to Iran for the recent assassination of their great leaders, who were martyred at the time of Al-Quds Day and on the path of Al-Quds. This is evidence that Al-Quds Day, that was declared by Imam Khomeini, has blossomed and is beginning to be fruitful, with signs of near victory getting nearer to Al-Quds Day as Al-Aqsa Mosque. As Palestinians, we feel that we are closer today to Al-Quds. Every year, we used to take part in the protests and events of International Quds Day, but this year is different.
This year we'll commemorate Al-Quds Day with a slogan which is noteworthy. The Flood of the Free is a slogan that is derived of the Al-Aqsa Flood Operation and the Israeli war on Gaza and the West Bank and Al-Quds, and it is a war that overshadows all other wars. This is a war launched by an enemy which is monstrous, untamed, and relentless in its killing and has no regard for any rules or laws or ethics or morals. This call to take part in God's Day and to strive for the liberation of Al-Quds is a religious duty of Muslims based on an initiative by the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. It's also a humanitarian duty for all the free people of the world who support righteousness and the struggle facing oppression and tyranny and occupation.
Despite the tight Israeli security procedures, checkpoints, arrests, and aggressions against the people inside the city of Al-Quds, there is readiness on the part of our people there and inside the lands of 1948 and the West Bank to commemorate the International Quds Day. This is in harmony with the protests which are taking place in many capitals across the globe where people have expressed their need for freedom. And Al-Quds Day is a manner in which people express and fulfill that need, and they are all voicing their support for Gaza and Palestine.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Thank you.
supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick, and healed, and made well, and afflicted, and sat upon the throne, and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulama that are Muslim scholars took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the episode of Ramadan special series, we are going to explain Ayah 124 of Surah Nisa of the Noble Quran. The ayah speaks on righteous deeds and the equality of man and woman in this regard. Stay tuned, please. Ramadan is the month of a banquet whose host is Allah, and everyone has been invited to the banquet. Fasting is not like Hajj, which is obligatory only when a Muslim is able, both physically and financially, to do it. Also, fasting is not like Khums or Zakat, which become obligatory for the additional amount of money or specific properties. Fasting also differs from daily ritual prayer, which is obligatory on everyone in any condition. Fasting is obligatory only during the blessed month of Ramadan for men and women who can abstain from eating and drinking for certain hours. Woman in Islam is equal to man in reproduction and continuation of generation. Man is father and woman is mother. Woman's role is not inferior to man. Both of them are essential for life. Allah says in Ayah 124 of Surah Nisa of the Noble Quran, "And whoever does righteous deeds, whether male or female, should be faithful. Such shall enter paradise, and they will not be wronged so much as speck on a date stone." Ayah 35 of Surah Ahzab of the Noble Quran also reads, "Indeed the Muslim men and the Muslim women, and the faithful men and the faithful women, and the obedient men and the obedient women, and the truthful men and the truthful women, and the patient men and the patient women, and the humble men and the humble women, and the charitable men and the charitable women, and the men who fast, and the women who fast, and the men who guard their private parts, and the women who guard, and the men who remember Allah greatly, and the women who remember, Allah holds in store for them forgiveness and a great reward." This ayah clearly shows that man and woman are equal before God. The road to perfection and sublimity is open for human beings regardless of their gender. As for social and personal rights too, there is no difference between man and woman. What seems to be discrimination in a few specific laws is due to the differences of man's and woman's nature. Therefore, some advantages are granted to man and some others to woman. God names Pharaoh's wife Asiye as a role model for all faithful. He also names Prophet Noah's wife as a role model for unfaithful. It means that woman is the axis of good and evil for the whole mankind. The reality of woman's status and dignity has been ignored in human systems throughout centuries. Some civilizations considered women inferior to men. Some others even considered woman as an animal at the service of man. In the ancient Rome, man was the absolute authority at home. He could sell, lend, or donate his wife as a means of pleasure or service to others. If she committed sin, he had the right to punish her in any way that he wished. He was entitled to even kill her. This continued in the West till Renaissance and the so-called era of Enlightenment. With the onset of the Industrial Revolution and formation of capitalist system, a new phase of woman's slavery began. The capitalist system, in order to increase consumerism and coordinate the market of supply and demand, was in need of forging a hunger for consumption of goods. In view of this, the media controlled by capitalists modeled the tastes of society in line with their vested interest. Thus, people thought that they should consume more to have a happier life. This trend led women, consequently men, to excessive consumerism. Women, however, were harmed more due to their nature. Therefore, they started a competition towards physical show-off. In other words, profiteering media inculcated the feeling in women that their value and personality was related to exposing their female beauties and attractions. This turned women into tools in the hands of companies and tradesmen. Consequently, sexuality and nakedness became a norm, and little by little it became the highest criterion to evaluate women in the West. It is a matter of laughter that this magnitude of disrespect to women and instrumental use of them has ever since been introduced as support for women's rights, and Islam has been propagated as a violator of their rights. Ruling systems in the world have raised various claims on women since old times, and most of them have been formed with the motto of equality of the rights of men and women. The Islamic Republic system is not an exception in this respect. The Islamic Republic of Iran has put forward novel view on women, and that's why it has been the target of incessant assaults by enemies for 45 years. Iran's Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi said in an interview with the Italian journalist Oriana Fallaci in 1974, "In the life of man, woman is not considered anything except when she is beautiful and charming, keeping her female features. You women have never had a Michelangelo or Bach or even a great cook. You have had nothing great. Honestly, how many women have you seen in your interviews who are able to administer a country?" Imam Khomeini, the architect of the Islamic Revolution, however, says on human dimension of woman, "Woman is a human and a great human. Woman is the trainer of society." Elsewhere, Imam Khomeini says on the Prophet's special attention to women, "The history of Islam is testimony to the unlimited respects of the Messenger of God to this noble child to show that woman enjoys a special greatness in society such that if she is not superior to man, she is not inferior." The Imam's view is in total contrast to the Western culture. Imam Khomeini considers woman as the trainer and manager of family, as believes that woman's lap is the best school for educating children. He says on the status of mother, "The many rights of mothers cannot be counted and fulfilled. One night of mother for her child is more valuable than a committed father's life. The embodiment of affection and mercy in the bright eyes of mother is the ray of mercy and affection of the Lord of the worlds." The hadith that reads, "Paradise is under the feet of mothers," is a reality. The Noble Quran presents the best and loftiest descriptions on women. This eternal book of guidance says in Ayah 21 of Surah Rum, "And of his signs is that he has created for you mates from your own selves, that you may take comfort in them, and he ordained affection and mercy between you. There are indeed signs in that for those who reflect."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
black and white.
Recientemente, en El Salvador.
Recently, in El Salvador, a country in Central America which has 6.5 million inhabitants,
de los cuales un 30%
of which 30% are in absolute poverty and 70% live in informality,
que gran parte de su PBI,
and a large part of its GDP is based on what is the contributions made by immigrants, general elections on the presidency and other levels of direction of the state have been held.
Elecciones presidenciales y también de otros niveles al Estado, a la dirección del Estado. En las presidenciales, Bukele.
In the presidential elections, Bukele has been elected by 82.6%. That is what the hegemonic press in general communicate around the world.
La prensa hegemónico y hegemónica en general tiró por el mundo. La verdad de que eso corresponde.
The truth is that this corresponds to 52% of the voters, of the people with the right to vote.
Lo que de los votantes. De las personas con derecho a voto.
48% abstained and did not participate.
No participó. Es decir, Bukele tiene aproximadamente.
That is to say, Bukele has approximately 80% of half of the Salvadorian electorate. That is the real result and not what is presented as a success in which the entire people turned to vote mostly for Bukele.
Que todo el pueblo se volcó a votar mayoritariamente por Bukele.
Bukele is a rather strange character.
En su tiempo,
in his time, it was said that he preferred the left 1,000 times over the right. Today he meets the extreme right leaders in the world, and he himself is one of them.
De ultraderecha en el mundo. Hace pocos días estuvo en una reunión internacional con Trump, con Bolsonaro.
A few days ago, he was at the international meeting with Trump, with Bolsonaro, with Milei, with Duke, among others, to express his successful policy of eliminating gangs and developing El Salvador.
Y desarrollo de El Salvador.
A development that does not exist anywhere. Though Bukele has always made many promises. He has made promises, for example, to build 4 universities in his first mandate. He didn't build them.
No las construyó. Ahora, mire, hizo una promesa.
Now at least he made a promise to build a Bitcoin city. Such a city never existed. A high-speed train that never existed.
Un tren bala que nunca existió.
But he did build the largest prison of all in Latin America.
Más grande de toda América Latina. Bukele, aprovechando el tema de.
Bukele took advantage of the issue of gangs, which were born in the United States at a time when the country was in an internal war. Where the forces of Farabundo Marti, National Liberation Front, were trying to take power and build a new society, since the country practically did not exist.
Donde la represión.
The repression of the state with the support of North American Marines was such that 10% of the Salvadorian population went to the United States. That is almost 500,000 people. At that time, El Salvador had a population of 4,900,000 people.
Luego Estados Unidos.
The gangs were formed there, then the United States detained more than 5,000 and sent them back to El Salvador, to a place where young people had nothing to do but to join with these prophets who arrived to offer them some opportunity to survive.
Profetas que llegaban a ofrecer alguna oportunidad para subsistir. Eso es lo que ha manejado Bukele.
That is what Bukele has managed. Deception, repression. and he has taken advantage of the gang phenomenon created by the system itself. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy, desde San Salvador, El Salvador, estamos con Walter.
Today, we're with Walter Rottles from Salvador, El Salvador, author, journalist, university professor, and manager of an independent media.
Autor también de libros como Ni Militar Ni Sacerdote.
Walter is also the author of books such as Neither a Soldier Nor a Priest, The Fate of Amoy, and Against the Power of Communication of the Excluded. He was the host of Venceremos, the official radio channel of the Farabundo Martí Front for National Liberation during the armed conflict. Walter, welcome to Black and White.
Walter Raudales a Negro y Blanco.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you from here in El Salvador to try to make sense of this very obscure reality on social media. Undoubtedly, there are many aspects that can only be clarified by those of us who actually live in El Salvador. Thank you very much and hello to you all.
Gracias a ti, Walter. Mira, desde...
Thank you, Walter. In our countries, for example in Chile and other countries, when we see the news of Latin America, they emphasize the great victory of Bukele and usually talk about the suppression of gangs and say that this has made the people very happy in general.
A las pandillas y que eso tiene a la población en general muy contenta. Yeah. Eso es lo que se habla.
This is what they are talking about. Anyway, before you answer me, it's good to give you a little introduction about the time before 2018 or 2019 when Bukele came to power for his first term as president.
2019 ya cuando asume la primera ¿cómo se llama? Presidencia Bukele.
What were the previous conditions? What allowed him to emerge as a political figure? We know that he changed the political position because everything tells us that at that time he was aligned with the Farabundo Martí Front.
Porque todo nos dice, cierto, que estaba ligado al Frente Farabundo Martí en su momento.
Bueno, lo que pasa es que no podemos dar por hecho eso.
Yes, we cannot assume this for certain. There are many facts and lies. So we need to specify these two things. In El Salvador, we have a situation similar to what Charles Dickens said in the book Two Cities. He says that we are in the best of worlds and in the worst of worlds at the same time. Later, the best of the worlds turned out to be the digital world, the great digital armies that here are in the service of the current government of President Bukele. The number of people and the production form of his virtual mobs or trolls have been exposed. As a result, here there is a machine. On the other hand, the worst of worlds is the real world. According to the United Nations World Food Program, poverty has increased in El Salvador. When this government came to power, poverty rate stood at 19%. This percentage has increased significantly, and today we are talking about a very high percentage of people. We have a population of 6.5 million, and the World Food Program estimates that 1.8 and almost 2 million people live in El Salvador who are on the verge of starvation. So there are a lot of lies. When it comes to media, you have to be able to analyze very well, otherwise you can get it wrong. Look, previous governments, even the right-wing governments from the Nationalist Republican Alliance, ARENA, tried to somehow negotiate with the gangs. Leaked information indicates that they had contacts to establish some kind of agreement with these gangs. The first FMLN government, the left-leaning Farabundo Martí Front for National Liberation with Mauricio Funes, attempted to negotiate with the gangs. There was talk of a famous agreement, and they negotiated with the gangs, and even the Organization of American States entered the process. At that time, there was a lot of violence in the streets and throughout the country. When Bukele came to office, he had secret and non-public negotiations with the gangs. This issue was revealed in the audio files that were released. They never published it publicly. Under previous administrations, approximately 10 of the 14 main gang leaders were jailed. Here, they're called ranfla, which is considered as a main committee with the management of gangs. Due to the crimes committed by these prisoners in America, the issue of their extradition to America was raised. At this time, the current government, in a judicial coup, dissolved the Supreme Court of Justice and the Constitutional Court and imposed a new Supreme Court of Justice. This work is referred to as a judicial coup. At this time, in May 2021, the legislature came into action and virtually all extradition proceedings were halted, and this administration agreed with the gang leaders not to extradite them to America. So, how can there be a fight against the gangs when you agree with the gangs not to extradite them in exchange for a reduction in murders? In addition, a very important news was published here, and that was the release of the third leader of these gangs, who is known as Crook. He was released from prison by a government agent. That government agent takes him to a luxury apartment hotel for one night. He takes him to Guatemala, arms him, and lets him through. America arrests him in Mexico. Crook's trial made everyone here very angry because he disclosed important things there. So there is a secret negotiation with the gangs.
We are going to take a short break now, and we'll be back with Walter Raudewals in a few minutes. We continue with Walter Raudewals. We were saying that there are a series of statistics that are sometimes manipulated and not accurate. These statistics are about crimes. Continue, please.
Adelante, por favor.
Bueno, entonces, mi planteamiento es que esta...
So what I'm suggesting is that this apparent reduction is a fragile peace based on a secret agreement with the gangs, which has now been exposed. This agreement will have many consequences because when this agreement is lost, this issue is known as mafia peace. This issue has been widely reposted on social media. So I also said that the best of worlds is in social media and the worst of the worlds is in the reality. Because this situation raises the main issues such as crime, which is in a very bad condition. Poverty and hunger in El Salvador are concealed and may not be apparent in social media. El Salvador does not produce as much as it consumes and has to import. El Salvador's economy basically revolves around $7 billion in income that El Salvadorians send to their relatives in the form of remittances from America and communities far from El Salvador's homeland in Canada and Europe. This is their only support. Foreign investment has fallen since the time of coronavirus and has not yet returned to its previous state. Some large garment production workshops that existed in the textile industry are gone. Agriculture has been completely damaged, so the country is run only by remittances. El Salvador exports people. Many of our brothers are forced to flee because there are no living facilities. What I'm suggesting is that we have the best world in the digital space and social networks, but the worst world in real life. As a result, we have two versions of El Salvador here. I want to delve into this issue more deeply. To understand this element conceptually, note that Bukele is an American laboratory. When I say America, I mean its imperial position. They're working with different gangs and they're getting results. They get results because they are people outside the political system and model. They take advantage of the weakness of political parties, corruption, and unacceptability. But they simply embellish this unfavorable situation and support it with new technologies and social networks. They gain attractiveness and create interesting characters using their powers. An example is Javier Milei in Argentina. Ecuador is another example. So imperialism is proposing and testing various models, and it has achieved its desired result in El Salvador. According to this explanation, in Argentina, and almost in the same way in Ecuador, they want to control these countries with this method.
Walter, in the same context, American imperialism and the West in general created Daesh in West Asia as a way to destabilize everything and intervene, and as we all know, to implement its own policy. It seems that here the issue of drug trafficking, gangs and crime and security are issues that are always not topics in the hegemonic media, and they talk about crime every day. People want their lives to be protected, and the eyes are directed towards the governments that you mentioned at the end of your speech. And that's how we find out about Noboa and Milei. We see how governments are becoming police states and how public liberties are being eroded. How is this in El Salvador today?
¿Cómo está eso hoy día en El Salvador?
Bueno, en El Salvador se aprobó un régimen de excepción.
Well, in El Salvador, a state of emergency was passed that takes away all constitutional guarantees and rights. March 28 marks 3 years of this emergency status. In this extraordinary situation, they can arrest you on the street. They will take you to the jail and you have no rights. You don't have even the right to defend yourself because they hold the brief trial for 300 prisoners. International and human rights organizations have constantly complained about this shameless violation of human rights. So there's an extraordinary situation that allows the police, the soldiers of the armed forces, and the military to arrest people on the street and even arrest you in your own home. Therefore, the most basic rights, such as the right to respect the place of residence, freedom of movement, etc., have been lost in this extraordinary situation. And we have been in this awful situation for 3 years now.
Walter, this is how I understand that there are over 65,000 prisoners, and of course over 8,000 were forced to be released because they were taken without charge. And they also say that the leaders of labor unions and the people who have been arrested, some of them were arrested at their place of work due to non-payment of damages and similar reasons.
Mire, es terrible, digamos, es terrible, es un régimen de terror, es un régimen de terror.
The situation is dire, it is dire. It's a regime of intimidation, a regime of intimidation. I cannot verify these numbers because the permission to enter the prisons has not been given to the international bodies that carry out the work of verification. There is a very large prison with gang members that they say is the cathedral of gangs. Because one of the provisions of the contract is to create a special prison for them. Most people are in the shadow of prison. We are talking about 70,000 people, but this is the information they give. At first, they deny that they had arrested innocent people. There is a movement of innocent victims of the regime called Movir. They are constantly providing information. The latest information is that until now, more than 270 people have died in prison under torture. No one gives you information. There is no process for this in the courts. It is better to say that there is no law in this matter. Worst of all, the arrest is done in a special way. They have set a quota for the policemen and they have to bring a number of people as prisoners daily. Therefore, they give leave to policemen and soldiers according to the number of people. This is a confidential matter and a terrible violation of human rights. Those who have been released speak of the horrific torture inside the prisons, which are considered crimes against humanity. But in addition, there is a media barracks that say this is a successful process and a successful model that is being practiced around the world. They do these using their media arms, their huge digital armies. It is clear that they will take away any possibility of citizenship from you. During 1 hour, they can put a sentence, an idea, and a thought in the minds of the Salvadorians. Do you know what the government's main campaign motto was during the presidential and regional elections? The main message was this: if you vote against the government, they will release the gang members. This is a message of fear.
Yes, that's right, Walter. Wait, you know what's interesting? How do you assess the results of the elections? Because here we discussed only the percentage of votes of the participants in the elections. 82.7% or something like that. About 48% of the population did not participate in the elections.
Se abstuvo de votar como un 48%.
Acaban de pasar acá dos elecciones, la del 3 de febrero que fue presidencial.
Two elections were held here on February 3, presidential and parliamentary elections. Elections turnout was 52%, that is, 48% did not participate. Municipalities, regions, and members of the Central American Parliament. It was an incredible historical issue because 70% did not participate in this election. There is only talk of the 30% who have participated. They committed fraud in the presidential election because, according to the Constitution, the president cannot be re-elected and this is prohibited. Therefore, the mere issue of the president's nomination was a fraud. The entire organizational structure was in favor of this issue, and eventually people have the impression that a fraud has occurred. I will give you a concrete example. When they opened the ballot boxes, there were unfolded votes. I mean, there are voting papers that were not folded. How can they enter that box but not fold it? These papers had to be folded several times to pass through that groove and enter the box. How can there be unfolded votes in the boxes? They were marked with pens other than the official pens of the elections. As a result, the impression that exists among the people now is that there has been an elections fraud and they have not been able to change it with all their media power.
Yes, it is. Walter, we're dealing with fraud and repression. We're faced with unfulfilled promises, for example, four universities that were supposed to be built but were never realized. El Salvador has become the most brutal prison in Latin America. This is Black and White. Thank you.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Well, once again, I have the honor and the pleasure to be here as your host. This is Asma, of course. And here with me, I have the pleasure to sit with Sister Nahid. She's a researcher on women's study. And then let her talk about herself. So, assalamu alaikum, sister.
Assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. This is Nahid, and I'm so honored to be with you today.
Thank you for my coming pleasure. Here. Well, as for today, we are going to cover up some more of factors. As you know, previously in Muslim Lady, we covered some factors about a perfect marriage. We went through maturity, the awareness that a woman must have. Then we got to some important points like you must be compatible, you must match and fit each other's perspective and definitions. And also we went through this financial compatibility to be stable in your financial status before getting married. Like we talked about the detailed part of it because it has got some aspects into itself. And then also we talked about emotional maturity, which is so important, because without that, you're not going to understand each other, and also you're not going to have a perfect life. So now we're going to get into some more of these interesting factors.
Yeah, the next factor we're going to talk about is the communication skills. As what I mean is that effective communication is
now
crucial.
This one is the most important one.
Yeah, and it is very crucial. Like,
yeah,
you should be able to communicate with your partner to understand their needs, to understand what they want from life, and especially in the cases of conflicts and arguments. If you don't have a good communication skill, you're not supposed to face the problem and match the problem with the solutions. Like, you're not supposed to find a correct way to solve your life problems.
Like, there was this study about the divorces that happen in the courts. Like, they have asked men and women, and what they come up with was the result was just like this, that most of these divorces happen because men and women do not have the right skills to communicate with each other. Like, maybe the two of them really love each other, but the problem is they cannot convey their meaning.
Yeah, there are a lot of disagreements. Like, they disagree with each other, but they can't say. If we even ask a lot of couples right now, they will say, like, my husband is not listening to me.
Exactly.
Like, my wife doesn't listen to me. And we are, I guess sometimes we are being too much, like, self-oriented.
Yeah.
We're not seeing the other person. We're not communicating with the other person.
And I must say that